Al Jazeera Podcasts.
Today, how we're expecting moms navigating a war zone in Gaza.
It's like a nightmare. I all the time, heck, I'm thinking about it. خلاص, especially that I have to deliver my baby by C-section.
I'm Natasha Del Toro, and this is The Take. Before Israel's war on Gaza, 42-year-old Lubna Al-Reyes was looking forward to giving birth.
And I dream about how I'm going to hold the baby in my hands. Yani, I think it will be great.
It was a high-risk pregnancy and a surprise, but a welcome one. She even held a gender reveal party with the help of her family.
My doctor, he put the gender in the envelope. My brother, he took it and he put it the blue car in a balloon.
But Lubna didn't imagine that she'd spend the final months of her pregnancy contending with a war and an uncertain future for her unborn child.
The airstrike and the bombing, it was very, very, very high. We are afraid that we will die.
Today, I'm talking with someone who's been following Lubna and her story for the documentary podcast Reveal.
My name is Gabrielle Burbet. I am a radio reporter and producer based in New York.
So, Gabrielle, you first made contact with Lubna when she was 7 months pregnant. And I know those were early days in Israel's war on Gaza. Hospitals were under attack at that time. Paint a picture for us of what maternity wards looked like back then.
So when we connected with Lubna in mid-November, at that point, many hospitals in Gaza had shut down their maternity wards or just not been able to have them working at any capacity at all because of lack of fuel, lack of supplies. So we had actually already by early November had seen reports from aid organizations that women were having C-sections without or with limited anesthesia. So when we connected with Lubna, the biggest question on her mind was how she was going to deliver in 2 months. She was 7 months pregnant and she was going to need a C-section. She had been reading the same reports that we had, and she was very concerned about what the state of the health system was going to be in 2 months and how she was going to be able to even plan for that delivery.
I can't even imagine, having those sort of concerns when you are 7 months pregnant. You know, there was no anesthesia in the hospitals. She hadn't seen a doctor since the war started. We know hospitals were running out of fuel and babies were being born prematurely. Lubna must have been very scared for her child. What concerns was she sharing with you during that time?
She was concerned about the fact that at that point in mid-November, it had been a little over a month with already very restricted access to food and to clean water.
Calls for humanitarian support for civilians in Gaza are getting louder. There isn't enough fuel to run overcrowded hospitals, and people are desperate for a steady supply of clean water and food.
So she was worried about the baby's weight. She was worried if the baby was okay. She also, though, did not want to go to a hospital to get an ultrasound to see if the baby was okay, because at that time, and still now, hospitals were reporting extremely unsanitary conditions. So she was very worried, about catching an infection in a hospital that would then potentially lead to something fatal in her pregnancy. So she knew that she needed care, but she didn't know how to get it. During the humanitarian pause, she was able to see one doctor at a private clinic. She waited for 3 hours with scores of other women who were in her same situation trying to get any indication that their pregnancies were okay. And then the power went out just before she was about to see the doctor. the doctor luckily had some backup power, but he could only take 3 people. And luckily, Lubna was one of those people. So she got the ultrasound that she, you know, had been not able to get since October 7th. And she found out that her baby was okay.
The doctor told me the ultrasound was normal. I was happy, thanks God. And I asked him about the weight of the baby because we are not having healthy food right now. And he told me everything is okay.
But she did ask the doctor if he had any drugs that could delay her delivery. Not just because she didn't want to deliver in that situation, but she was also already having stress contractions from all of the stress of the bombings. And she was very worried that if she even did deliver her baby, that there'd be no fuel for incubators. Her baby would be premature. By that point, Al-Shifa had evacuated 31 premature babies because that hospital ran out of fuel. So she was quite desperate when she saw the doctor, but he told her that she did not need those drugs, that she still was far enough out from the delivery that it wasn't necessary.
Oh my goodness. And was she in a place where the bombings were there close by, that she could hear them close by to her home?
Oh, yes. She talked about how it kept them up at night. They were in Khan Yunis at this point at a family member's house, and they would just sleep in the living room to protect themselves from the glass that was breaking from airstrikes that were hitting nearby. And hearing the bombing outside made her very afraid to go to a hospital before and after the humanitarian pause to see if her baby was okay.
And in an area where there is bombing happening in a war zone, is it normal to have these sort of contractions? Is that something that you see?
Aid organizations, and specifically the Emirati Maternity Hospital, have reported seeing many more preterm births because babies are born during stressful situations. Stillbirths, miscarriages, preterm births, all of those have risen since the start of the war.
The UN estimates that around 50,000 women in Gaza are pregnant, and around 180 of them are reaching their due dates every day. The continuing attacks are causing an increasing number of miscarriages and premature births.
And it's not just babies who are at risk. The mothers are, too.
We spoke to an OBGYN, Dr. Ghassan Jawad, to find out what it was like for the doctors caring for pregnant women there.
That's Salman Ahad Khan. He's also a reporter and co-produced the story about Lubna with Gabrielle.
He used to have a private clinic and he was an on-call doctor at Al-Shifa. But when Israel started its bombing campaign, he immediately pivoted to emergency care. He said every simple pregnancy now has turned into a complicated pregnancy. And every complication like UTIs or kidney stones now has the potential to become deadly just because they don't have the equipment to deal with those simple procedures. We talked to him about one of these cases, a young woman who came in with a UTI. And UTIs are the most common infection during pregnancy. And usually you give the patient a few antibiotics and the case usually resolves itself. But unfortunately, her case got more complicated. And within the span of a few days, she went from completely healthy to such a critical situation that they realized they needed to do an operation, but they couldn't do the operation because they didn't have the supplies. And unfortunately, she passed away within the span of a few days, going from perfectly healthy to critical.
With her due date approaching and the war escalating, Lubna has some tough decisions to make.
I wish I could have my baby after everything will finish and I can go back to my home and to have my deliver or my due date safely in my home and in my city, in Gaza City.
She decides she has to leave. That's after the break.
Get your news in less than 3 minutes, 3 times per day with the Al Jazeera News Updates. Just ask your home device to play the news by Al Jazeera or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
In early December, Gabrielle and Salman lost contact with Lubna. She was supposed to give birth in a few weeks. It was difficult to get in touch with anyone in Gaza at that point, so they looked elsewhere. Here's Salman again.
So we knew Lubna had a sister in Canada who was also trying to get her out, so we tried to track her down when we lost touch with Lubna. We had both also been reporting another long-form story about a Palestinian-Canadian trying to get her family out. And through her, we found out about this WhatsApp group of Gazan Canadians who had been lobbying the government to get their families out. And through reaching out to contacts in the group, we eventually found Lubna's sister, Wafa. When we spoke to Wafa, we realized she had actually been in Gaza and with Lubna throughout October, all the way till November. November was when the Canadian government finally started evacuating their citizens. And since Wafa was a Canadian citizen, she was on the list. She tried to convince authorities to let Lubna come with her. She said Lubna's pregnant, she needs a C-section, her case is really sensitive. But unfortunately, they said Lubna is not considered her immediate family, so she cannot be evacuated. Lubna was Wafa's sibling, and siblings at the time were just not considered immediate family, so they didn't get to go on the list.
All of this had happened by the time Gabrielle and Salman finally got in touch with Wafa. Here's Gabrielle again.
So Wafa, when we connected with her, this was mid-December. Wafa had been writing the Immigration and Refugee Offices in Canada. It's called the IRCC. She had been writing them. She had been calling them every day, telling them that she had a sister who was still in Gaza, who was 8 months pregnant, and was going to need a C-section in 1 month. She was not alone in doing that. So many Gazan Canadians were begging the government to do something to get their family members out of Gaza. She read some of the emails that she had gotten to me, and they ended with things like, you know, we're doing everything we can. We're sorry about the situation. Please tell your family to do what they can to stay safe. And that was just an infuriating response that she and so many Gazan Canadians had gotten.
How are you feeling during this time that you'd been in touch with Lubna, you understand what she's going through and how stressful and dangerous that situation is? What was going through your mind when you couldn't contact her?
At that point, she was in Rafah, and we were starting to read what was happening in Rafah. First of all, there were airstrikes. The last we heard from her, she was in a refugee camp. And at that point, all I'm reading about the state of at least maternal care in Rafah is that women are delivering in between tents. I think it's also worth noting that very early on into the war, actually, UNFPA, which is the UN's like reproductive rights arm, was distributing these emergency delivery kits, which had supplies for basically just like self-delivery. So scissors, umbilical tape, a plastic sheet to deliver on, a pamphlet instructing women how to deliver their own babies. Like, it really was just the best bet is just to figure it out on your own. So we did not know if she was alive, if she had delivered early, if her baby was okay. You know, something that Wafa had told us was that there was no formula. There's no clothes that you can get for the baby. It's like, even if the delivery is successful, and hopefully it is, there's no supplies for new mothers and their babies.
Oh my gosh. Lubna was finally evacuated to Egypt, where she was able to safely deliver a baby, a baby boy. Unlike scores of women in Gaza, as you've described, she had access to anesthesia and a functioning hospital. But the situation in Gaza has only gotten worse since Lubna left. And she says that despite having had the baby safely in better conditions, she doesn't feel okay. What can you tell us about how she's doing?
So on the one hand, she feels very lucky to have gotten out. And on the other hand, none of this is how she envisioned bringing her third child into the world. Something that really kind of haunted me from our conversation was that during her C-section, which routinely women are awake for. She said that she broke down crying and was just crying through the whole C-section.
I start crying and crying, and the doctors and the nurses, they are saying, "Tab, is there something? Is there pain? Do you have pain?" I said, "No, no, خلاص. My feelings are not okay. يعني. I am emotional pain, really."
For whatever reason, that was the moment where everything she had been through, she was just processing, and so much grief about the fact that, who are these doctors? These are not my doctors. This is not my hospital. These are not my nurses. I should be in Gaza right now. Why am I here? Who are these people? Like, where am I? Why am I here? So many people have been able to get out of Gaza, but it's like we don't follow up on how they're doing and how they're processing what it means to be out, to be completely forced from your home and just watch complete destruction in your home and not be able to do anything about it. She was devastated, and obviously she's very happy, but she's very scared for her baby. Right now, they don't have a way of making any real money. They have applied for a visa in Australia and were denied. And through the Canada program, they still have not been accepted to come to Canada through that program, despite being immediate relatives with a Canadian citizen.
Are you still in touch with her?
I am, yeah.
And emotionally, is she, you know, how are you sort of noticing that she's doing?
One thing that she said that didn't make it in the piece was that her two teenage daughters are not okay. Very, very traumatized. She said that her eldest daughter, who's 18, has to sleep with her in the same bed every night because she wakes up screaming from nightmares. So she is just trying to be like an emotional pillar for the family, in addition to being a new mom, in addition to being in a new place. So I think that's top of mind for her right now.
Lubna still dreams of going back to Gaza one day, and she plans to tell her son what happened.
I think I will tell him everything. I'll tell him the story. How brave he was in my heart, in my belly, and how the difficulties we went through. And how I feel when I put him in my hands, or that, يعني it's a miracle. It's he comes after, يعني he went out of death. Really, we went, me and him, out of death, out of war.
And that's The Take. This episode was produced by Sonia Bagat and Chloe K. Lee, with Negin Oliai, Sirih El-Khalili, Khaled Sultan, Amy Walters, Miranda Lin, Ashish Malhotra, David Enders, Zaina Badr, Farnisa Campana, Catherine Newhan, and me, Natasha Del Toro, in for Malika Bilal. Our sound designer is Alex Roldan. Alexander Locke is The Take's executive producer, and Ney Alvarez is Al Jazeera's head of audio. We'll be back.